Hi, and welcome to Webcams TV. I'm your host, as usual, Corey Fowler. Joining me today is Chris Ross. Chris, you're on the ASP.NET team, is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. So what are you here to show us today?
I'm here to show you the bowels of ASP.NET.
The bowels of ASP.NET.
Yes.
So we're getting a huge anatomy lesson today.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty exciting. And this has to do with the vNext release.
Yes.
So when I say that, though, all of the bits are out there today.
Yes. So we have alpha bits on our nightly feed and included in the Visual Studio CTPs.
So this is Visual Studio 14 CTP?
Yes.
And that's available at ASP.NET/vNext?
Our bits are available there.
Ah, yes. Okay. So we'll get you links in the show notes as to where you can go down, go download the CTP for Visual Studio. You can always head off to ASP.NET/vNext for anything ASP.NET related, which is awesome.
Yep.
Cool. So do you want to take a step back and give some kind of philosophy lesson as to what the plan is for ASP.NET vNext before you go and dive into a demo?
All right. I'll defer most of that to some videos that we've already recorded,
okay,
such as from Tech Ed, and we'll make sure those links are posted.
Yep.
They've covered a lot of this philosophy, but I can summarize by saying that we're trying to reintegrate a lot of the components that we've been building over the last couple of years, MVC, Web API, SignalR, Katana, into a little more cohesive framework, as well as restructuring it so that things like System Web are not one monolith.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick and choose what you want and build your application the way you want.
Great. So what I'm hearing from you here is we're moving away from some of the monolithic pieces of the overall framework, making smaller, easier to consume pieces. So basically, when you go and compose your ASP.NET applications, you really only need to get the bits that you need in the pipeline.
Exactly.
Brilliant. And that makes things a lot easier. So, you know, if you do care about things like authentication or those, you can pull those in. If you don't care because it's an internal NAP, you know, it's sitting behind a firewall, there's nothing to worry about, you just leave that part off and, you know, everything goes through a nice, very small pipeline of what you actually need to render out.
Exactly.
That's really awesome. Cool.
Which makes things like performance and debugging much more straightforward.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, because that's really, you know, as web developers, that's the thing that we care about, is how quickly can I debug the issues that I'm having? And taking those pieces that you're not using out of the stack is definitely a great way to do that. And then things like making sure that your application's performant is really one of those things that's hard to do unless you're really deep into it.
Hmm.
But one of the big things that you can do is just removing those pieces in the first place. So it's great to see that we're moving in this kind of direction.
Right.
Awesome. And this also kind of has to do with the fact that we've gone and we've recently open sourced ASP.NET altogether.
Most of it. We're getting there.
Yeah.
MVC, Web API, SignalR, Katana. Yeah. The core System Web stuff still needs some work, but we're replacing most of that anyways.
Okay, cool. And that's what you're going to be showing us today?
Yes.
Awesome. So I don't know if you want to talk about what you're going to do in your demo. It's usually good to highlight something. So what are you going to be showing us today?
So the demo consists of just a simple Hello World web application running in a console app.
Cool.
But what's interesting is how you boot up that world and what the request lifetime looks like to get to that application.
Okay, great. So we're going to be seeing end-to-end, you know, I'm guessing when you say web application and console app, it's self-hosted?
Yes.
Okay, so we're taking IIS out of the mix and we're actually going and hosting our own pipeline.
Right. So I'm going to show how I will at least mention how it will work in IIS.
Cool.
It's very similar, but harder to demo.
Excellent. That's perfectly fine. So do you want to pop open the demo and we'll take a look at what's going on in vNext?
Next. Okay. So I'll pop open this part really quick and skip right over to here. If you want to get any of these bits and follow along, you go to github/ASP.NET.
Cool.
And you've got all of our instructions here. Starting with this piece, that says I'm going to install the version manager.
Okay.
For our runtime.
Cool. It's one of my favorite things, PowerShell.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent.
And I'm just going to do that really quick to show you. Elevated command prompt. All right, paste that in there. What this does is it's just going to download two small things for you. A PowerShell script called KVM and a command batch file to run that. So if I go ahead and run KVM, it doesn't do much. But KVM list tells me what versions of the runtime I have installed.
Okay.
KVM upgrade goes and installs the latest version.
So that's going from my machine and saying upgrade. It's a self-upgrade. So it's going off grabbing the new version of the KVM bits?
No, it's grabbing the new version of the runtime.
Of the runtime, okay.
Which we call carry.
Okay.
Yeah, the naming needs work,
well,
but we'll
get to
that.
It's the K runtime environment. I mean, it's very similar to the Java runtime environment. I mean, I can see where the things have gone there. That's cool.
So once we've downloaded the KRE, let me show you this really bit. Here we go. You can just run the KRE by saying krun, and it starts looking for a project.json file.
Okay.
Which is our new replacement for CSproj files.
Okay, cool. So it's very much like if I was building out a Node.js application, I'd have, you know, my, I just totally blanked on me. I think it's actually package.json file, which basically goes and describes what your dependencies are and what's all kind of in there.
Right.
That's interesting. Okay.
Something like that. And for the simplest possible application, it looks something like this.
Cool.
I have a dependency on console output, and I can compile against the desktop 4.5 framework or the new lighter framework called the Web Optimized Framework, or just here it's just called K10.
Cool. Not to be mistaken with K9, which is like, you know, man's best friend or
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who, exactly. Well, that's actually what I was thinking originally, was little K9 from Doctor Who, but.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. And that console app, when you say krun, it's just going to load up program main and just do whatever you tell it to. Hmm. This is the simplest thing you can run.
Great.
So we're not even going to bother.
Here's the canonical example. You can go run that yourself. We're going to move on to greater things.
If you can't handle this, you might need to watch more videos.
And we are going to link off to all those videos that kind of explain as to what's going on from Tech Ed, potentially from Build. So it would be great. Go down there, grab it, and we'll be good to go.
All right. Now we can load up our real demo. This comes from our GitHub ASP.NET Entropy repo that has all of our samples of how we think things should actually work.
Okay.
I've added these for the sake of making the demo a little easier.
Great.
But this is a simple Hello World application. If you were familiar with Katana, this will look very familiar. If you were familiar with MVC and other guys, not so much.
So I see here we have a project.json file, we have a startup.cs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that literally the whole application?
Yep. There's still web config in here, but okay. I don't think we're actually using it at the moment.
Great. So all of these other things are like other parts of different
These are other samples in the same.
Okay. So this is like you've downloaded the one big sample package. But the thing that we're actually concerned about right now is the builder hello world.web, and it's literally just those three files.
Yep.
That's incredible. Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And it has its own set of dependencies. Nothing fancy. And what's interesting here is instead of saying krun, we say kweb because we've defined this web command.
Okay.
That just drops these command line arguments in for us.
Okay. And the command line arguments I see here is the server is a web listener. So is that opening up a TCP socket to the world and allowing you to go and view it? Or obviously because we said URL, it's going to localhost.
We'll get to that.
Okay, brilliant.
Yes. So let's actually look at the stack that that opens up. We walked through, well, let's do this really quick.
Okay.
When you say krun, that's going to run just a simple kcmd.
Yep.
That sets up a couple of default arguments and starts running the klr.
Okay.
Whose job it is to boot up the world.
Okay.
Which first it does by deciding if it needs to boot into the desktop framework or the new, we're calling it Core CLR or Web Optimize CLR.
Okay.
And from there, it has to locate your main method and run that. So in a web app, we provide a main method in this package, Microsoft ASP.NET Hosting.
Okay.
And that web app is responsible for a couple of steps. It locates the server, mm-hmm. which we specified right here. This is just the name of the server binary.
Yep.
It creates an instance of it. It locates your startup class and lets you build out your application pipeline.
Okay.
And then it hands that pipeline back to the server and says, go. Process requests.
Okay. So I'm just going to take 1 second here. So the core CLR is that part of K, or is that like actually relying on the other CLR, like the .NET CLR?
There are two CLRs of reference here.
Okay.
There's the traditional .NET 4.5 CLR that's installed on everyone's machine.
Yep.
You can run all of the K components on that.
Okay.
Or you can say, I want to use this other CLR that is not installed on the machine. It's deployed with NuGet packages.
Okay.
It's not one giant NuGet package. It's broken up into, say, 50 individual packages, and you only have to deploy the ones you want.
Okay. And is all that kind of derived from that dependency graph that we looked at in the...
Exactly.
Okay, cool. So I guess this is a good time to kind of talk about something I noticed a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. So when you're on GitHub and you were scrolling down, I noticed that it said Linux.
Yes.
So this is one of those things where it will actually run using Mono, and when you go and take that secondary CLR, is that what's happening? Is it's pulling down components from Mono, so you could be running this on a Linux machine?
No. When we run on Linux and Mac, we actually just run on the native Mono install.
Okay.
The core CLR is still just for Windows so far.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. I can understand why you would want that, though.
Well, it was just kind of a thing that I noticed in passing,
yes.
So I was like, is this what's happening? So, no, it's good to know, because there is
I guess there are three CLRs we're interested in.
Yep.
Desktop, Mono, and Core.
Okay, great.
Okay. And, yes, most of the components so far work on OS X and Linux.
Excellent.
With a special note for the servers that we'll get to in just a second.
Okay.
Let's see. Anything else? Building up your request pipeline. Here we go. So before you had lots of modules in ASP.NET,
mm-hmm.
managed, native, everything. And most of those were turned on by default. And if you really wanted to get rid of them or configure them, you'd have to do a lot of web config work.
Yeah.
Assume that this is the reverse. This method configures your application.
Okay.
It starts with nothing. And you have to go in and add in the individual pieces you want. So, in this case, we are adding a very simple pass-through component that just lets us look at requests. And we're adding a very simple terminal component that just writes out hello world. And that's the entire application.
Okay. So can you expand a little bit on what the pass-through component is?
Yes.
Is that So if I did have additional components that I required, is that where I would go set them up, is in that use method, which is passed through right now?
Let me get you a better example for that, actually.
Okay.
Down here at the bottom is an example of using MVC. So MVC is just another component you can put in your pipeline.
Okay, so it looks like here, if I'm seeing this correctly, mm-hmm. anything that is app.use is kind of like a component.
Yeah,
like that's where it's building stuff off of. And then you add a whole bunch of components, and then each of those components have their own use method where you go and explain yes. what it needs to do.
Excellent. And each of these are really just extension methods mm-hmm. over the base app.use that is providing a very simple HTTP context to you.
Okay. So, I mean, in some of these areas, and this is probably going to be completely out there, but what I'm seeing here is use is kind of like, if we were to equate it to today's ASP.NET, mm-hmm. would be kind of like the global ASAX file, as where it's doing a lot of
startup.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Startup is very similar to the global ASX.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
And use MVC is just saying, I've got an MVC component I want to put in the pipeline here.
Yeah.
It's going to be after my auth and before my static files or something like that.
Okay. So, yeah, the startup, if we were doing a file equation, is definitely startup equals global. And then the pipeline is like, it kind
it's
of comes from all
like
over the place.
It's the integrated pipeline.
Yeah.
Except you get to choose the order.
Ooh. That's another cool thing, being able to choose the order. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to stop interrupting. You just take it away here.
We have some much more involved samples, like the MVC Music Store was always a classic ASP.NET sample.
Yep.
And that's the one that we're porting over as our demo that shows you how to configure everything.
Cool. And that's actually made by a team member of mine, John Galloway. He's done a lot of work on that, but I mean your team does a lot of work on it as well. Mm-hmm. So that's actually a great app to go out there. We'll make sure there's a link for that below when it's ready. Okay. But I love those demos, like MVC Music Store, the Nerd Dinner demo was an awesome one. Lots of great things that come out of your team pipeline wise in terms of like okay. awesome demos.
Awesome, yeah. All right, so let's get into actually booting up this system. And I think the simplest way to do that is to just attach the debugger to this thing and look at the stack that we're going to get from it. All right, we're going to boot up. We're going to attach the debugger because we want to see how we got to this startup method.
Okay.
So we're going to break out this stack trace and see all the fun components we went through to get here.
Brilliant.
So we mentioned earlier that ASP.NET hosting has a program main in it.
Yep.
That's what the runtime starts up.
Okay.
And this runtime had to go find the server. It had to find your startup method. Mm-hmm. And I guess we're not actually going to see most of that here. It's going to start executing. It's going to go run your configure method. Mm-hmm. It's going to build up the application. And this just results in a pipeline. And when I say pipeline, I mean the server only sees a single delegate that says, here's a request, yep. tell me when you're done.
Okay. Yep.
Which means that you can do some really advanced customization in here of forking it out or terminating early or anything you want. When the request flow gets to you, mm-hmm. you own it.
Cool.
So I'm going to continue that. I'll attach the debugger. You said. So here it's going to add this component to the pipeline. Yep. is what the servers actually do when they're executing your request.
Okay.
And there are three servers that we're going to talk about just briefly.
All right.
WebListener is the grandchild of HTTPListener from system.net.
Yep.
Just cleaned up and streamlined a little bit.
Okay.
Kestrel is a raw sockets server that we are playing with for cross-platform development.
Now, when you say playing with, does that mean it's an existing project and you're finding out how to fit the ASP.NET pipeline into it, or?
It's a project owned by one of our devs.
Okay.
And it's not intended for production. It's just so that on Mac or Linux, you can spin this up for development purposes.
Okay.
And you can run MVC on mono.
Okay.
Helios is the code name for the adapter into IIS.
Okay. So that just goes and plugs everything into the regular IIS pipeline, or does it, because the whole idea surrounding the vNext of ASP.NET is to decouple a lot of things.
Right.
And make the pipeline very easy and streamlined. Does that mean the Helios adapter is going to go through, remove the current IIS pipeline, inject your own pipeline? Or is it just right now attaching to the side of it kind of thing?
What it's going to replace is the ASP.NET pipeline,
okay,
not the IIS pipeline.
Okay.
Yeah. So it strips out all the managed world and replaces it with a whole new integration point.
So it no longer goes through like a SAPI and all that kind of stuff. It's just replacing this piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you still have the native modules. You still have the native static file module and things like that. Those are pretty useful if you want them.
Yeah. Like, well, there's different, I mean, IIS can do more than just ASP.NET. So there's like
exactly
PHP and, you know, hooking up anything with FastCGI, really. So Python, all those things.
Right.
So yeah, you don't want to get rid of the full stack just in case you are running multiple things, but this replaces the ASP.NET pipeline for
right.
It. Perfect.
If you want to get rid of the full stack, you leave IIS entirely.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can do two things, right? You can go and disable everything, which is probably a lot more work than it needs to be, or you can just go and work with the web listener. And
yes,
that's the alternative. And is web listener currently in production ready state, or it will be?
Web listener is slightly more stable than the rest of our early components.
Okay,
but not quite to production.
Okay,
late alpha.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. We're working with Kestrel because WebListener is still dependent on the Windows-specific HTTP server stack.
Yeah.
HTTP.sys that is used by HTTPListener, WebListener, and IIS.
Yeah.
Which provides a lot of scale and functionality that saves us a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you're processing requests, they come in on the socket, they come in through HTTPSys, they come up to the WebListener layer, which has its own simple object model request response, nothing fancy. And then you start getting into the ASP.NET layer, where we introduce something called features and the iFeature collection.
Okay.
So instead of every server having to go implement HTTP context and conform to that really strict object model, we say that instead, the servers just have to implement a few simple features like this one, the IHTTP request feature that has the raw data.
Okay.
It's got the headers, query body, everything.
Cool. That's that's definitely pretty pared down.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And let's look at one slightly more interesting one. This is the WebSocket feature.
Oh, great. So it's literally, and this is kind of going and looking at decoupling those things as you literally, if you don't need to support WebSockets in your application, you leave this off and this is the only thing, like WebSockets alone is the only thing that you're missing out on in that case or adding
exactly
on to your application.
Yeah. Right. So with Kestrel, for instance, it doesn't support this one.
Yeah.
At all.
Because there's currently no WebSocket implementation for Kestrel.
Right.
Yeah.
But this iFeature collection.
Yep.
So we create one of these per request. We add the relevant features to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we pass it up to the hosting layer. From there on out, individual components can add, remove, replace features for the sake of augmenting the feature or just adding whole new functionality.
Yeah.
So for Kestrel, it doesn't have WebSockets, but it does allow you to do a simple 101 switching protocol.
Okay.
Which lets you say, just give me the raw stream, the raw socket, and I'll take over from here.
Cool.
And then we have a WebSocket middleware that can build on top of that. It adds the WebSocket feature to your request, and it implements the whole WebSocket protocol completely outside the server.
Oh, that's really cool.
So Kestrel now has WebSockets, not because it had to do WebSockets, but because it exposed the bare minimum and somebody else added it.
Yeah. So what's happening there is you're basically just taking the pipeline and you've built the feature completely outside of the web server. So all you need to know is, hey, yes, I can communicate raw socket, but I need to implement my own WebSocket protocol. That's been done through middleware, which is just a nice little addition piece. Mm-hmm. And then that hands it off to your application to say, hey, you know, yes, we have WebSocket support now.
Yep.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be really useful for doing simple servers and for augmenting your servers as you go. Let me look at one more thing here, which is just a brief summary of some of the features we've defined. The connection feature, for instance, just has information about your actual raw connection. IP addresses, ports. And I don't think Kestrel exposes that one either, but it wouldn't be too hard. Transmit file, or send file as we call it here, is one of the first things we added to WebListener.
Cool.
For use in static files. Because it just says, give me the file path, and I will go down into kernel mode, and I will transmit that file directly from disk to your network card. No more reading it off the disk into managed memory and writing it out one segment at a time.
Hmm. That's great, because that should speed things up right there if you're just taking it straight off disk and pushing it away. Yeah, having to just sit there and chunk away at it's not really the quickest way of doing things. Cool.
Exactly. So this saves you a lot of CPU when you're trying to get out just basic static files.
Cool.
And that's a feature that some servers will have, some won't, but it'll just light up when it's there.
Awesome.
Any other? No, that's probably good for now. No, one more, sorry. Simple feature that says, what's the lifetime of the request?
Yeah, so you mentioned this earlier where the pipeline's basically handed off to you after it goes through what, you know, the very simple Microsoft
server
ASP.NET server layer.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be how you would go and abort that request once it's in your hands.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Most commonly, this request aborted would be used to let you know that the client disconnected, and so any work you do from now on is just wasted.
Okay, that's good to know.
Especially on long-running requests.
Yeah.
Or when you're stuck hitting the database or something.
Okay.
And this abort is more of a emergency disconnect the client because I have nothing useful to say to them.
Mm.
Or I think they're malicious or...
Okay, great.
Otherwise, you'd normally just send back a 404 or 500 saying, sorry, I can't handle this.
Yeah. Okay.
So the iFeature collection is really just a collection that maps those interfaces to an implementation provided by the server.
Yep.
Which is what makes those replaceable and makes the server not have to do everything. But that's not something that's really developer consumable.
Okay. But can you plug into the feature collection at all? Like, obviously, if I was to go and make my own implementation of something, like say, you know, no offense to your team, I'm not a big fan of the WebSocket implementation, mm-hmm. or not even the fact that I'm not a fan of it, more along the lines of, you know, there's a new spec come out and you're still launching the new one, but I need this right away. They could go create their own implementation of WebSockets, plug it in, and away they go.
So
not necessarily the typical developer would go plug into the stack, but mm-hmm. that's the whole point, is we're making this pluggable so it's a lot more flexible for anyone to be able to take over.
Exactly.
Excellent.
And there are even a lot more minor features, like there's one for reading the request body as a form. Mm-hmm. And cache, and the implementation we have caches that form in memory, so when more people ask for it, you don't have to reread everything.
Yeah.
It's a very simple feature, but if you wanted to, say, store that form on disk because it's huge, mm-hmm. you could replace that feature.
Yeah.
Much simpler functionality like that.
Cool.
But as I said, working with iDictionary type object is not everybody's idea of a good time.
Yeah, no.
So when you get into the hosting layer, just before it goes into the actual pipeline, it says, it wraps it in one of these. An HTTP context that has all your really basic data on it. Mm-hmm. And this is very comparable to ASP.NET's HTTP context.
Okay.
Except it's much easier to replace.
Yeah, and there's things like get feature and set feature, which probably wouldn't have been there before because there was no features to add.
True. Too true.
Okay, cool.
So this is what the developer works against. This is what MVC is built against, SignalR. And they do what they need to the request and the response. And then they unwind that pipeline and they're done.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. If you want to dig into those, that's a whole nother talk.
Yeah, no, definitely. Cool. Do you have another demo for us today?
No, I think that's it for now.
Okay, great. So in terms of people going out and getting this, obviously we'll have links off to the show or mm-hmm. off to the things that you've shown in the show notes. But the best place would be
the best place is
GitHub.
ASP.NET Home on GitHub.
Okay.
That links to all the getting started instructions. And if you want to get to anything else I showed, they're all right here. MVC, Music Store.
Where would they get the Entropy?
Entropy.
Oh, there it is right there.
Yep.
Excellent. Cool. So that has a whole bunch of demos where people can go and weed through mm-hmm. and find out how they would leverage this in their own applications.
Exactly. The Entropy examples are very simple.
Yep.
If you want to see something a little more complete, you want to look at Music Store.
Great.
Just for reference. Here's what a slightly more complicated app might look like. It has configuration, it has environment variables. Mm-hmm. This section is all DI. That's a whole different talk.
So just to clarify for other people,
dependency injection.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is something that's been plumbed all the way through the stack now. Mm-hmm. I won't claim to know anything about it. But yeah, and here we've actually just added some very simple things to our pipeline. We've got an error page. We've got some static file serving. Mm-hmm. We've got cookie management. We've got MVC. And this is my custom application.
Cool. So that error page, you know, probably not something we should cover. I was just thinking a while back when I was doing a lot of web development for other companies. There was basically a vulnerability where it was going off and finding out what the error page was, or finding all the different HTTP status codes, and then doing that, they could generate the key for the server. And then basically they were making a request that would be able to do elevated permission execution on the box. So
crazy.
Oh yeah, it was this crazy thing. So I'm guessing the error page is just sending back a common HTTP status code like we did when we patched the bug?
The error page, if you've seen the one from Katana, this is a direct port.
Okay, great.
It has this, right now, if you see, I have it saying show all. So this is more of a developer setup where I want to see all the details I can. So it gives me the full stack trace. It gives me source code pointers for that stack trace if it can.
Okay. And this is something, okay, the fact that we have an enum there kind of scares me a little bit. Because if I do put show all, okay, yeah, so the note above it says it all. Error page options dot show all to be used for development time only and not recommended for production. So that's one of those things where you're going to have some conditional logic to make sure that it switches out when you do go to production.
If debug.
Yes. No, that totally makes sense. Okay, that's the good enough clarification. I think anything that you would put in there, because it is an enum, my guess is it's probably not flagged, so you couldn't include multiple.
It's actually not an enum. This is a config object, and this is just a static version of it that says with everything turned on.
Okay.
Because it's a pretty common debug scenario.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
But if you use just the normal one with everything turned off, all you get is a simple white page that says, sorry, something went wrong.
Literally with like a ASCII art frowny face.
There's some of those.
And you can implement your own because, I mean, it's completely different.
Exactly. let me show you something really quick. The bulk of the error page logic consists of this. And then, I need a async and a wait. And using system. That's the poor man's error page.
Okay.
Capture all exceptions from the pipeline and show them.
Cool.
And here I've just written my first middleware component.
So you did have another demo on you. Excellent. No, that's really cool. And you know, it goes to show that it is very with a system that has been decoupled such as this, it's very, very simple to go and add your own components.
Exactly.
Obviously you just wrote one right there.
Right.
And that's awesome. That shows the true power of ASP.NET VNext.
Excellent.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to give you one of these little niners for your time here. So thank you very much. And thanks to all you out there that continuously come back and watch the show. And hopefully see you next time here on WebCamps TV.